Welcome to the PMO and Project Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Louise Gardner, Founder and Managing Director of Pledge Consulting. And today I'd like to welcome you to episode one of our short five-part series on project management office basics. So first episode, today we're going to dive into what PMO is, explore some of the different types of PMO, and delve into the roles and responsibilities that generally define what PMO is. So whether you're just starting off in PMO or a seasoned PMO pro, there'll be something here for everyone. So let's get started. So the project or program or portfolio management office or PMO should serve as a guiding force in organisations. It's typically intended to be a centralised function that standardises project management processes. It often provides reporting and data analytics. It can support project governance, and sometimes it will ensure that projects are all aligned with the company strategy, the strategic goals of the organisation. PMO, as you're probably starting to gather, is a very wide and varied thing, but these are some of the most common elements that we tend to see. Executed well and staffed appropriately, PMOs are the backbone of successful project execution. So let's talk a bit more about types of PMO. Depending on the organisational structure and the needs of the individual projects, there are several common types of PMOs that often get discussed. Again, I really want to stress here, there's no right or wrong structure for a PMO. It's there to serve the exact needs of the specific organisation or the department within an organisation. So there's no wrong way to do this. You'll know when you've got it right, though, because you're actively contributing to better organisational project outcomes. Theorists and industry associations and groups tend to classify PMOs in a few main ways. So firstly, we have what's known as the supportive PMO. A supportive PMO, as the name suggests, provides support to project teams as and when required. It can provide standard project templates, project guidance on best or good practice. It may conduct training, track lessons learned. It really plays a consultative role to projects. It also, though, exercises quite a low level of actual control or authority over projects. And supportive PMOs are often best suited to organisations with a functional or a weak matrix type of structure. A few quick points on supportive PMOs. So, as I said, they're intended to play more of a consultative than an authoritative role on projects. They might supply templates, good practice, training, access to information, and lessons learned from other projects. Usually they can't enforce anything on a project, so they have no direct authority, which means, of course, that they have a low level of control. The next type of PMO we'll talk about is a controlling PMO. So a controlling PMO does everything that a supporting PMO does, but some more. So the most important aspect of this kind of PMO is that it does have some power to enforce compliance with organisational practices. A supportive PMO can only guide and recommend, doesn't have the power to enforce, whereas typically a controlling PMO can have some or moderate level of control over projects. And it's best suited to organisations with a balanced matrix type of organisation structure. Some key points on the controlling PMO. Provides support and guidance in managing projects, may also provide training in project management practices and perhaps in software. It can assist with specific tools when required. It does have the ability to enforce compliance, may contribute or enforce compliance to project management frameworks or specific methodologies. It may enforce compliance to tools and templates. And it tends to be the link into where a PMO will contribute to good governance. As I said, this kind of PMO can offer some moderate control. The next type of PMO we'll talk about is the directive PMO. As the name suggests, this type of PMO has some authority. It can direct projects. It has a high degree of control, or sometimes full control, over projects. It can provide or allocate resources. It can often have project managers who are assigned to projects, and the project managers might also report into this PMO. There's a number of structures here, and they don't always, but sometimes you will get project managers who are part of that PMO structure. A directive PMO helps in achieving high levels of consistency across projects because the single authority and reporting structure is quite robust. It's best suited for organisations with a strong matrix or projectised organisation structure. So some points on this one. Projects are directly managed by the PMO. Project managers are assigned by it and sometimes report into it. The PMO in this case is responsible for the outcomes of the projects, and it has a high level and sometimes full control over project. Now, it's important to say that you might not want to implement any of these models in their direct form. You might want to take a little from column A, a little from column B, a little from column C, and that's absolutely fine. Very rare do we see these PMO types implemented out of the book. But what is useful is to have a look at what these PMOs might offer and compare with that with the services that you require. They're also very useful for building a business case for a new PMO. When you are taking your business case to the board or to the leadership team, they might not know anything about PMOs. And so this kind of structure or model, it's very useful for educating people about what value PMOs can add. So I certainly wouldn't live and die by a type of PMO, but I would certainly be guided and influenced by some of the literature and some of these models. They can be quite useful. Some of the other types of PMO you'll hear mentioned are enterprise PMOs or an EPMO. EPMOs are often a centralized group, which may have other satellite PMOs reporting into it, with the idea that the projects controlled or governed by the EPMO are aligned with organisational strategy and that portfolio reporting can be provided in a consistent way. Very useful to have an EPMO, certainly in large organisations. You may have a divisional PMO. Divisional PMOs are often tailored for specific units, business units. This may align projects with specific goals of the division, but more likely they're usually just looking after the needs of that specific group and that specific group of projects. And sometimes you'll have a project-specific PMO. It could be a project, could be a program, but it's set up for a single piece of work and will disband upon completion. Many mega projects would have this kind of PMO, which you know sometimes have quite a long life. It can be 2 to 10 years in some cases, but once the project is wrapped up, so is the PMO. So while, as I say, you might not stick strictly to any of these models or titles, choosing the right mix of services for the PMO is a fundamental key to success. Okay, let's talk now a bit about PMO roles and responsibilities. So the PMO plays multiple roles within an organisation, each critical to project success. So the PMO may have a key role in governance, ensuring adherence to company policies and alignment with strategic goals. The PMO can play a key role in steering committees, in reporting, in project assurance. Again, some kind of PMOs will not touch that, and the most they may contribute to governance is making sure reporting is done in a consistent way. But some PMOs take a fundamental role in project governance. PMOs will also almost always be on the hook for creating standardisation. Standardisation is essential for good reporting, and most organisations really care about being able to report properly on projects. So the PMOs need to create uniform process and templates for efficiency and consistency. Very, very important. Often PMOs will be very involved in managing resources. So overseeing staffing and in some case recruitment, budgeting for resources, and really taking a detailed look at project resource supply and demand. So what resources will the projects need in the next period, whether it's 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, and what resources do we have? This is particularly important in the case of specialist resources, which we know are often scarce. So we never have the people that we need, and so we need a good lens to see where we can get those people from in the periods that are coming up. Very, very important function. Probably one of the number one things that we talk about with customers, actually, the need to be good at resource supply and demand management. Another key role on for PMOs is project monitoring and reporting. So again, it's a core role of most PMOs. The ability to continuously track project performance, both in cost, in time, in risk, in resources, all of the things that we're talking about, and to provide analysis and insights around that data. Very, very important. A successful value-adding PMO will be able to produce accurate data every month. Many PMOs are on the hook for providing training and support, sometimes for their PMO colleagues, but often for project managers, making sure that project management skills are developing within the organisation, making sure they're consistent, and offering ongoing report, both to the things that PMOs care about, obviously, like reporting, for example, but also things that project managers should care about, but often, you know, sometimes tick the box. So things like risk management or making sure changes to projects are documented effectively. So there's a whole range of training and support that PMOs can add a lot of value with. The roles associated with these responsibilities will vary greatly depending on the size and complexity of the team, of the portfolio, of the project or program. I'll give you an example. You know, in the reporting team on a project, it may be one person. On a large mega project report, it might be a team of six people. So there's really no right or wrong for team sizes or mix of roles here. But all of these things obviously provide a guide, and I always like to talk about what's typical. But talking about the applications and the importance of PMOs in a practical sense, it's important to underline that PMOs are not just a theoretical concept. It's all very well and good to look at models and to understand on paper what the value is. But PMOs are a practical function. Many successful organisations can't run projects effectively without a PMO. From tech giants to relatively small businesses, your PMO can and should provide a framework across delivery and governance for managing projects, programs, portfolios effectively and efficiently. Imagine a scenario where you've got a lot of projects happening simultaneously without a standardized approach. Everybody is doing things in a slightly different way. That leads to chaos, it leads to miscommunication, it leads to data inaccuracy, it leads to inefficiency. Ultimately, it leads to project failure. So the PMO really shines when they're creating streamlined, consistent processes, supporting delivery teams to achieve what's required, to collaborate with delivery teams and with other stakeholder groups, and supporting projects to successful completion. The real-world benefits are tangible and significant to a high-performing PMO. There are times, however, when PMOs can get a bad name. We've worked with many organisations, and over 20 years, I've seen this quite a few times, where the last PMO didn't quite fire. They had some people in, ostensibly to do the PMO function, but they either weren't the right people or they didn't get the right support. And for whatever reason, the value proposition just wasn't realised. In this case, PMOs can be thought of an overhead function or an administrative function, or generally a bit of a waste of time. And it's always a challenge to try and set up a PMO when that has happened. So the important piece of advice I'd give to you there is start off with some low-hanging fruit, get some wins on the board, do some things that are not that hard, because if you look around, there is always something. It could be as simple as providing some templates or talking to project managers about where the risks are up to. There's usually some low-hanging fruit that can differentiate your PMO from the last PMO that didn't go that well. So bear that in mind if you're going in after a failed attempt. So to wrap up today's session, we've unpacked some of the basic concepts of PMO. We've laid the foundation for future episodes. And next time, I'm going to explore more about how to set up a PMO, diving into the nuts and bolts of creating this really important organisational function. Thanks for listening. Be sure to join us for the rest of this series. We hope you find it useful. The PMO and Project Leadership Podcast is supported by Pledge Consulting. As well as our extensive range of consulting and advisory and delivery services, did you know that Pledge Consulting also offer coaching and mentoring to individuals and to groups? If you'd like more information on any of our services, please take a look at our website at www.pledgeconsulting.com.au or drop us an email on info@pledgeconsulting.com.au. Thanks.